Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're recording another show from the venue of Spokane, Washington. The occasion, the ASI International Convention. It's August of 2015 when we're recording this broadcast, and across from me is a guest who I have featured on American Indian Living before. It's Vicki Griffin. Vicki, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Vicki, you are the director of a group called Lifestyle Matters. How long have you been working with that project?
14 years.
14 years. And I know people that know about your work, Lifestyle Matters is synonymous with high-quality health education materials. Is that the kind of connection you want people to have in their minds?
Well, we're very pleased with that association.
Okay. You've got some new stuff that's out. You were just showing it to me. I haven't even seen it. Tell us about some of your latest projects.
Well, the passion that our group has is creating health education materials that others can use to bring better brain health, better habits, better life to communities everywhere without a huge financial investment, simple, practical ways to add value to your life.
Mm-hmm. One of the great things about the stuff that you've done over the years, I've used it in community health projects. No doubt there's people in tribal health centers, in community groups, churches, other faith communities that have used your materials. I know a number personally that have used your stuff. And one of the things you've got is, like, right out of the box, you've got, for a health professional, you've got PowerPoint slides that are all designed if I want to give a talk on diabetes or addictions, right?
Right. Our latest one is called Hearts on Fire.
Hearts on Fire. Now, that's begging a lot of questions. Tell us what that's all about.
Taming the fires of metabolic syndrome and chronic inflammation that lead to heart disease.
Okay. Now, this is close, really close to home in Indian country, as well as any segment of the American population, because the metabolic syndrome, of course, is the result of insulin resistance.
That is correct.
It's the same thing that lies at the root cause of type 2 diabetes.
That's right.
And you're connecting the dots, saying this is a big problem for heart disease.
And heart disease, it's chronic inflammation. It's chronic systemic inflammation. And acute inflammation, if you get a bee sting or break a bone, inflammation is a good thing. But when it is chronic and when it is metabolic, then it begins to do damage.
And in the programs that you've put together, the ones I've seen, I haven't seen the newest one, there's always some kind of practical component. You're not just educating people about a disease. You're telling them, here's some simple things you can do. Are you continuing that same type of approach?
Absolutely. Otherwise, information becomes crushing. It becomes depressing. Mm. We want people to make modest, simple, easy, practical, inexpensive shifts in their daily choices that are like picking up change and putting it in your pocket. It adds up, and there's a cumulative effect that has a powerful effect on brain, body, habits, mood, and energy levels, and that's what people need.
Tremendous, tremendous. So let's talk about the heart disease situation. Someone's listening right now, okay? They're tuning in, and they're saying, listen, I've got to listen to this. My husband just had a heart attack, or someone else is listening, and they said, I was just in the cath lab and the heart lab. They did a dye study of my heart. They found I've got serious blockages, and they told me I need bypass surgery.
Right.
Now, we're not going to try to treat anyone over the radio waves, but whether they've got a serious heart condition at this point or whether they're concerned about heart disease, what kind of simple, practical things does the science show us can actually help someone, if you will, reverse that disease process?
Well, let's take a look first at a couple of conceptuals that you have helped us with in some articles we've written for Balance Magazine. And that is, often we refer to our plumbing, our arterial system, our vascular system as pipes.
Okay.
I've got plumbing. But they're living organisms that respond to the choices that we make, to the environment that they are in. And so most heart attacks and many strokes actually originate from unstable plaques. As a physician, you know this, fatty deposits in the arteries. And when they rupture, it releases deadly compounds that can produce life-threatening clots. There's another process besides atherosclerosis, which is what we're describing right now, and that is called arteriosclerosis, which is a stiffening of the actual artery. So I am from Michigan, and when we leave our garden hoses outside in the wintertime, they become stiff and inflexible. So now if you try to run water through those hoses, what happens to the pressure? Does it go up or down? Well, it goes up.
Uh-huh.
And so simple lifestyle changes not only reduce these nicks in the arteries that create these immune reactions and create these clots and these lesions within the arteries, but also changes the flexibility of the arteries themselves.
Okay.
So some very simple things can lower blood pressure, stabilize cholesterol, improve the quality of those arteries. And, you know, we think of arteries as going to our hearts, but they go to the groin.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the periphery. They go to the brain.
That's right.
And what we say is the battle is really not for the bulge. It's for the brain. It's not about weight control. It's about appetite control. And that's a brain thing. So the great thing that you are asking me, and I haven't answered it yet, is that the simple ways to dial down this chronic inflammation is going to address arterial function and integrity. It's going to address diabetes, metabolic problems, brain health, diabetes, obesity. Don't have to do 10 different things for 10 different diseases.
No, I mean, this is a great message. So what I hear, you know, loud and clear, you're saying, Dr. DeRose, listen, we're starting to talk about heart disease, but when we talk about protecting your heart and the blood vessels that go to the heart, the coronary arteries, we're really talking about a program that's going to help all the blood vessels in your whole body, right?
That's right. So if we were to put it just in one concept, inflammation literally means on fire.
Okay.
So we want to dial down inflammation, chronic inflammation. So let's talk about some practical ways to do that.
Please, what do we do?
First thing, stop the smokes.
Okay, you mean, no, wait a minute. You know, we've got a lot of Native American listeners
right.
who, you know, tobacco is, you know, a sacred plant. You're not saying necessarily that they can't use tobacco in a ceremony. Maybe you are saying that, but we won't go there in this show. But you're especially talking about addictive smoking, right?
What I'm talking about is what happens in the body when a person takes a hit off of a cigarette. When a person takes a hit off of a cigarette, a drag off a cigarette, I used to smoke, so I only know the slang language.
Okay,
I don't know
enough,
how.
Fair enough.
Okay, so.
What happens?
What happens is 1,000 chemicals enter the system, and if you watch someone smoking, they will take a puff from that cigarette every 30 seconds, and it takes 7 seconds for the nicotine to go from the lungs to the heart to the brain, and then bang, it creates this release of these chemicals.
Okay.
And so there is a reaction that occurs, but the downside of that reaction is that the pleasure hormones that are created, it actually destroys the vesicles that produce them in an attempt to dial down the assault of too much chemical in the brain.
So what you're telling us is that when someone's, let's take the example of someone who's a habitual nicotine user.
Yes.
Okay, using it day in and day out.
Right.
The brain is becoming overstimulated.
And so it builds what is called a tolerance. So now what is happening is there are fewer receptors available to receive that chemical. It takes more chemical to find fewer receptacles. So now what happens in any addiction, and this is the misconception about addictions.
Okay.
People who have not experienced addiction think that people are running around with these addictions trying to feel good. But the reality of addiction is that we're doing the behavior or the substance in order to keep from feeling bad.
Right, right. No, exactly.
And so it takes time. and perseverance for the brain to return to normal functions of what we're referring to actually is dopamine. Mm-hmm. The good news is that there are more types of dopamine receptors in the brain than are just associated with immediate pleasure. In the higher centers of the brain, there are dopamine D3, 4, 5, and 6 receptors, so that when we engage in other kinds of pleasurable activities that require focus and attention and time to achieve, those dopamine receptors are stimulated, giving a different kind of pleasure. So in other words, when I delay smoking and go for a 10-minute walk to boost mood, when I do the right thing and delay something instant in terms of gratification, when I work on a term paper or when I work on a project, a painting project that's going to require time, when I finish it, there's an experience of reward.
Okay, so you're not telling us that that reward experience from working on a term paper or taking a walk is equivalent to what would have happened with that hit of nicotine,
no,
right?
No, it's a compensation.
Okay.
It's what is called a redundancy or a backup system.
Okay.
We have backup systems in our brain, and over time, the reward of delaying instant gratification actually overreaches the impulse. The impulse rewards are actually not as gratifying long term because impulse rewards that are immediate result in fatigue, tension, and depression when they are overstimulated. I mean, look, we need to have gratification, and we want, when we get a hug, when we do things that create a sensation of gratification, that's a good thing. We are designed for all of those responses. But the difference between a good habit and a bad habit is that a person who is learning automatic behavior, and a lot of addictive behavior is automatic, when a person is learning a good habit, it actually frees hard drive space in the brain to learn new things. And when we're learning new things, the brain is very eager to learn new things, and it actually creates joy to learn new things. But the addicted brain is losing its ability to learn new things. It's losing ability to create associations with other things. So understanding this, understanding that we need to fight with every tool in the box to break any addiction, whether it's media, whether it's tobacco, whether it's alcohol. And I come from a winemaking family.
Okay.
So whether it's pornography, whether it's whatever it is, the long-term effect of continued persistent involvement with media, a behavior, or a substance, despite its destructive consequences, is a surefire sign of addiction, and that includes food.
So let's see if we can kind of recap what I hear you saying and make sure we're getting this. And I'm speaking more to myself than to anybody tuning in today. So what I hear you saying, Vicki, is we're looking at a list of some things that can affect our risk of heart disease,
yes,
but specifically or more broadly, inflammation in our bodies.
That is correct. And honestly, we've gotten off into addictions.
No, but it's good. It's good.
Frankly, some of the things that are very bad for the heart are the very things that we're addicted to.
That's why I'm kind of trying to pull this all together, because what I hear you saying is one of those things that is really tough on our arteries is addictive smoking, and that those continual nicotine surges that we put through our body. And what you're telling me is for the person that's listening in right now, they say, listen, I'm putting away 2 packs, 3 packs a day.
Yeah.
Maybe it's only a pack or a half pack. They say, I could never be happy without the nicotine. What you're saying is, no, that's not the case. You can be happier, even though there's a challenge to go through as far as withdrawal, and your blood vessels will be happier too. Am I hearing that message loud and clear?
That is absolutely correct. And there are actually, I mean, we've gotten off into smoking, but it's an important topic. There are actually 7 R's. It's a recovery lifestyle for stopping smoking. So, you know, first of all, number one, the 7 R's, real food. So real nutritious food is going to cut cravings and improve mood.
Okay, we want to go through this whole list. We're just about out of time, Vicki, in this segment. But I know you're not going away. And I know our listeners, if they're like me, they're saying, I don't want to go away either, because we want to hear these practical things that we can do to deal with nicotine addiction. So Vicki's got that. It comes right from one of their publications called Up in Smoke. We're going to be back with Vicki Griffin and with other great material from ASI in Spokane, Washington. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in just a couple of minutes.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
My name is Florence AQ. For lunch today, I had grilled chicken and squash. I am Zuni Indian, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
My name is D. Dakota Denesosi. I turned the TV off and took my nieces and nephews for a walk. We saw two jackrabbits, an eagle, and zero cartoons. I'm from the Dene Nation, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
Science has proven that if we lose as little as 10 pounds by walking briskly for 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and make healthier food choices, we can prevent diabetes.
My name is Barbara Akisakpuk-Curtis. I'm losing weight and being more active. I am Alaskan Inupiaq Eskimo, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
For more information on how to prevent diabetes, talk to your health care provider. For free materials, call the National Diabetes Education Program at 1-800-438-5383 and ask for the power to prevent diabetes. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Meryl Streep. Over the years, I have played some characters you could call controlling, but the truth is, there's so much in life we can't control. But here's something we can. Colorectal cancer. It affects men and women, and it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., which is astounding, considering it's almost entirely preventable. Here's how. Most colon cancers start as polyps, and screening helps find polyps so they can be removed before they even turn into cancer. Screening also finds this cancer early, when treatment works best. For me, screening was simple and quick. It was no big deal, except for the huge sense of relief you feel afterwards. There are several tests that you can choose from. If you're 50 or older, you should talk to your doctor. Decide which one's right for you. Take control. Do everything you can to prevent colon cancer. Screening saves lives. It could really save your life. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose with Vicki Griffin, Director of Lifestyle Matters. We're talking about important, life-changing information. Leading cause of death still in most Western nations is heart disease. It's true in America. And Vicki's been explaining how heart disease is largely a product of inflammation in the blood vessels. She's walking us through some simple things we can do to decrease inflammation. One of them is if you're an addictive user of nicotine, tobacco products, using it on an addictive basis, you got to cut the cord. Vicki, you've been giving us some practical suggestions. We're just about to do it. Mm-hmm. Please walk us through those.
All right. Well, let's just back up just a little bit and talk about dopamine. Dopamine is a word that's widely used, and it's associated with addictions and the pleasure centers of the brain. But there are many, many types of dopamine receptors in the brain, and there are different ways to stimulate dopamine. And the other thing that I want to say is that dopamine is not just associated with feelings of happiness and reward. It's also linked to motivation and learning. So when those receptors get beaten up by overstimulation from nicotine and they start to wear out and die out, then what else happens besides lack of pleasure, a lack of motivation and inability to learn? New things? And so it really becomes important for us to stimulate a balanced level of dopamine in relation to other neurotransmitters in all areas of the brain. So this circuitry is altered due to addiction, but it can be resolved. It can be repaired. Mm-hmm. We are made for renewal, recovery, and restoration. And so there's an aggressive recovery lifestyle that actually promotes healing and stimulates dopamine and reduces the risk of relapse. And I call it the 7 R's for a recovery lifestyle.
Okay, so 7 R's. You're going to actually help us. And this would help not just with the nicotine addiction. It would help with
the overall issue of heart disease, because heart disease is linked to inflammation. And the very things that are going to reduce addiction are also going to dial down inflammation, because we can be addicted to inactivity. Sometimes we think about being addicted to things. We think about being addicted to activities or substances or foods, but we can be addicted in one sense to destructive lifestyle habits that just create tension and fatigue and cause some real problems. So as we look at these 7 R's, if you have obesity or diabetes, if you're battling a food or substance addiction, if you have heart disease or high cholesterol, these 7 R's are for you.
Okay, please walk us through them.
Number one is real food.
Real food, okay.
Real food. So nourishing food is going to strengthen both the body and the brain. So these plant foods, we call the produce department the Department of Defense.
Okay, fair enough.
They are rich in antioxidants and nutrients that actually are going to repair cellular damage. And your brain is made up of cells. It improves circulation and is a major determinant of brain health. So when we have good nutrition, it's actually going to cut cravings for sugar and stimulants. And tobacco is a stimulant. So what do? Bottom line, eat plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables, lots of whole grains, beans, legumes. These are going to help to balance blood sugar and lower insulin. By the way, elevated levels of insulin in the brain cause nerve cells to commit suicide.
Okay, now wait a minute. So I mean, we're bringing a lot of stuff in here, and it's important,
yes.
But I'm just trying to kind of sort this all out. So earlier in this interview, Vicki, we talked about an epidemic that is at the root of heart disease. So one of these things that's driving the heart disease epidemic is the metabolic syndrome.
Correct.
So when we have insulin resistance, when our tissues are not responding to insulin as they should, our body's natural response is to raise those insulin levels.
And the insulin is like a grocery boy.
Okay.
The grocery boy brings the groceries to the house.
Okay.
The groceries are glucose. That's the fuel of the cells.
Fair enough.
And when the grocery boy gets to the doorbell, when a person is insulin resistant, that means he can't find the doorbell. So he keeps calling for more and more grocery boys. So now you have a condition called hyperinsulinism. The glucose is not getting into the cells. It's not getting into the skeletal muscles. So one of the first symptoms of insulin resistance is chronic fatigue.
Okay.
And so the energy is not there. It's not being produced. And so now you have a condition where the blood sugar is high. So the insulin keeps compensating more and more and more insulin. So now the urine, you start to dump sugar. You have elevated insulin levels, and these insulin levels also are high in the brain. And so it affects brain health. It actually causes new nerve cells in the brain to die.
Wow. So the high insulin levels, even before you develop diabetes, are damaging the brain.
Absolutely.
We knew for years that those higher insulin levels were associated with higher rates of stroke and heart attack. But they're also affecting learning and performance. Is that fair to say? Do we know that?
Mood, memory, learning, behavior.
Wow.
And so there's this amazing backup system in the body. When the blood sugar levels are high like that, when insulin levels are high, the body sees that you are in major stress. And so now the kidneys, the adrenals that sit on top of the kidneys, start pumping out cortisol, a stress hormone, longer-acting stress hormone. And what is the purpose of that? Well, the purpose is to save your life and clear this blood sugar. So the cortisol is released, and your liver starts to cause the release of free fatty acids, which glom onto those sugar carbons that are floating around in the blood, producing triglycerides, and it nails it right around the mid-belly. And that's a major cause of mid-belly fat. And Indian populations are at particular risk for this. It's a metabolically active fat. It affects the brain as well as the body. So having real food starts to dial down that inflammation. Getting exercise every day, especially aerobic exercise, begins to break down that highly metabolic fatty tissue that's around the mid-body.
Okay, so although it may seem, as we're walking through this journey together, Vicki, that some of these things are kind of intermingled they really are. We're talking about how you can break free of nicotine, but you're walking us through these processes, and you're saying, you know, it's not just helping. You know, someone could be listening to this show. They say, I don't use nicotine on an addictive basis. I don't even use tobacco ceremonially. But what you're saying is eat those real foods, those whole plant foods, because they'll help lower insulin resistance.
We are all living life every day. We are all in training. We are not training for an athletic event, but we are all in training for getting through a day.
Fair enough.
So the seven R's that I am talking to you about are the seven R's that I live by in order to stay healthy.
Okay, so the first one is real food.
The second one is regular exercise, and we've already discussed it. Number three is rest. And this is very, very important because regular sleep is going to restore the brain. It actually elevates the mood. It helps blood sugar balance and stress hormone balance the next day. And all of these things tend to lower cravings, lower anxiety, improve learning and memory so that you can actually face the challenges of every day. Here's the key. There are no drive-through breakthroughs in life. And so we have to adopt a strategy for meeting life's challenges that is actually going to build strength and endurance rather than artificial stimulation.
Okay.
Because you're going to crash and burn mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in every way. And here's the thing that's so important to remember. We can be absolutely running in a complete state of emergency to a meeting that is completely unimportant. Mm. All your body signals are telling you it's urgent. But the most important and urgent priorities in life, we may not have those alarm signals going off. But they are urgent. So these seven R's are critical, even though we're not in a panic. The body doesn't respond in a panic. They're urgent. They are priorities.
So really, it's so easy for people when they seem to have a lot on their plate to just burn the candle at both ends, as we say.
Exactly.
To get less sleep. But what you're saying, you're making a plea saying, please get your rest.
Stress is a major, major trigger for tobacco users, and losing sleep actually reduces discernment and judgment so that you don't discern as much. You don't care as much about what you do discern.
Wow.
And you are not going to care about your choices as much because your brain is fatigued and decision making has been reduced to chance levels. So we need to understand that good deep sleep is a priority.
Okay, so we've got real foods, those whole plant foods. We've got regular exercise. We've got rest. What else is on your list that can help our hearts and help us break free of addictions?
This is an old-fashioned grandmother term. It's called regularity.
Hmm.
And you helped me with this on a personal level many years ago when I had a post-infection irritable bowel syndrome. Everything in our world is based on regular patterns and systems and rhythms, and your body, my body, is no different. So establishing regular hours for meals and exercise and rest actually heals and energizes the brain and body. And I have even learned that when there is something that I have no control over, that I'm concerned and worried about, I will give myself a certain time every day and a certain period of time to think about it.
Wow.
And in my faith tradition, I pray about it.
Uh-huh.
But when that time period is up, I'm done.
Really? Okay, so you say, I'm not going to worry about this all day. I've got these few minutes.
That's exactly right.
Vicki, we are almost out of time, and you got to just give us these last few points.
The last few are wonderful. They are relationships. Get a buddy system. Responsibility. You have a choice. And religion. Spirituality is the center of a healthy lifestyle.
How can someone get more of your materials?
They go to lifestylematters.com.
Lifestylematters.com. Vicki, our time has rushed away from us. You are most gracious to join us. We've got to step away. We've got more coming up in this edition of American Indian Living. Don't go away. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We will be back with more. Stay tuned.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
I'm Karen, and two very important people in my life, my husband and my father, have been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is a type of irregular heartbeat. People with AFib are 5 times more likely to have a stroke than people without AFib. Talk with a healthcare professional today about your risk and learn how to manage AFib to prevent a stroke. Visit stroke.org/AFib to learn more.
Did you know that 63% of homes contain allergens from cockroaches? And that mice spread potent asthma triggers found in 82% of homes? It's true. Common household pests are major offenders on the list of indoor allergens. Learn what you can do to help your family breathe easier. Visit pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Spokane, Washington is where we're at. We're in a convention venue, and we're interviewing people who are here for the International ASI Convention. Across from me is someone else who has been focused on putting together quality health education resources. His name is John Youngberg. John, it's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much, David. It's great to be here.
Now, John, you've got an illustrious background. You were a college professor for many years. Is that right?
Well, graduate school.
We
lived in South America. Mm-hmm. And while in South America, we worked in Bolivia among the native population of Bolivia. Mm-hmm. We had hundreds of them there in our school. I was president of the college.
Okay.
Now a university. And there's just great, great people. Of course, these are the Quechua Indians.
Uh-huh.
And Aymara Indians.
Okay.
And we have an invitation to go back to Peru here later in the year. And we'll be in Peru and hopefully go back to some of these ruins of the Inca Indians and see some of their wonderful places. But yes, I've been a teacher on the college level, and I've been a teacher for 25 years on the graduate level, training doctoral students and master's students.
So what is your academic background? What is your training in?
My training is in educational leadership as well as human guidance, and guidance of people, as well as religion.
Okay. And so you have this background. You've been a teacher, college professor, graduate school teacher, president of a college, and at some point working with indigenous peoples in South America as well as working with other populations, you somehow felt there was need for a curriculum on the subject of wellness. So tell us about your current project.
Well, actually, David, it was just a marvelous thing. We had worked with families for many years. Actually, my wife and I had spent 25 years in charge of Family Life International, bringing trainees from all over the world to do a leadership course in families. And then we said, well, this is good. We've been doing this a quarter century. But as we retired, said, well, let's see if we can combine this with physical, biological wellness. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. We have family wellness, we have biological wellness, and even spiritual wellness.
Okay. And you rolled this all under one umbrella, and you came out with a program some years ago called WIN Wellness, correct?
That is exactly correct.
Now, I actually picked up your program some years ago. I've used some of it in community settings.
Good.
I can't tell you I've used the whole curriculum. I mean, it is, I'll be honest with you, John, I think it's probably one of the most extensive, comprehensive wellness curricula I've ever seen.
Well, that is various evaluators have said that. They haven't seen a more comprehensive program, because there are wellness programs which deal with the biological wellness, mm-hmm. but seldom do you find one that deals with the family aspect as well as the spiritual aspect.
So tell me how this program has been used. How long has it been out there, first of all?
Okay, this WIN sort of was invented by us in the year 2002.
Okay.
So we've been working on it 13 years now.
Okay.
And actually, we started in Spanish and running this in Monterrey, Mexico.
Okay.
And then we moved it over into English, and we still work in Spanish and English. And sometimes one is ahead of the other and one is behind, uh-huh. and then they switch places. And so it's been a real joy to see this go to the world. Sometimes today, for instance, in the Far East, in Indonesia, and the Philippines, more in Indonesia, in the Bahasa language, they have installed 1,000 dishes for television, and they are giving this program on these thousands of dishes, and they say they are reaching some 18 million people with this program.
Wow. So you're telling me that this program has been out for now 13 years, is not just being used in English and Spanish-speaking countries, which are the two primary languages that it came out in, but it's been translated into many other languages?
A total of 30.
Wow.
We just found out this week or two ago, Sri Lanka, they have now published our material in three languages.
Okay.
In Tamil, Indian language, pardon me, I think it's for Hindi, another language is spoken in nearby India, because many of the people came from there. And then there's the native Sri Lankan language. And, of course, some of the people speak English. And so they're publishing in four languages in one island nation.
Wow. So give us an idea of some of the principles, because I think people are saying, okay, so the Youngbergs have come up with this great program. Maybe they've heard of it. Maybe they've used it. Maybe they haven't. I'm guessing that even though it's been well distributed throughout many countries, there's probably still the majority of my listeners who've never heard of it. So give us an example of something in the social health realm. Someone's listening today. They've got challenges in their family. Are there any simple principles that you can communicate to them?
Well, Dr. DeRose, you have cued right in to one of the most important factors, and that is social support. And I imagine among the native Indian population, you're probably more cognizant of this than other peoples, because some of our other friends in this country, it's every man for himself.
Okay.
But this population understands that we all need each other.
That's right.
And we got to work together. And in the famous Alameda study, done near San Francisco over 25 years ago, in the follow-up to that study, after they had located, and help me if my memory is short, after they had found that certain factors help to create better health, such as not smoking, such as getting sufficient rest, such as eating the right kinds of food, drinking good pure water, and so on, that they outlined all these. I believe there were six different factors that they had found. They did a follow-up on that study a few years later with the same people. They found out that the greatest factor that influenced their health was not any one of these, but it was social support. And social support of our neighbors, of our friends, really meant more. Imagine, this is hard to say, but it meant more than the combination of all the other factors.
No, I mean, this is pretty amazing. I remember looking at that data many years ago. You're right, a very famous study. Those of us who have public health backgrounds, we all know this Alameda County study associated with Lester Breslow, who was at one time the state health director for California. And, yeah, you see these factors, like you mentioned, whether it's being at or around your ideal weight, whether it's physical exercise, whether it's adequate rest. And we say, yes, these are important. They indeed found those were important factors for longevity. But you got it right on. Those social factors, contact with friends and family, being part of a faith community. These things, you're exactly right, more powerful than those other factors. And I think for a lot of us, when I first saw that data, it was pretty surprising.
Just think. So, we could live as hermits out in some mountaintop all by ourselves in our teepee or whatever. Mm-hmm. But actually, we need each other. We need neighbors. But that means you have to learn to get along with those neighbors.
Good point.
And so, and of course, in the marriage relationship, we need a spouse, we need a good husband, we need a good wife, we need children who grow up respecting their parents and walking the talk and moving in the right direction.
Some good points. And, you know, some might wonder where that teepee came from, but those who haven't actually seen where we're recording, we're recording here in a live venue in a convention center, and we're actually being hosted by a group of Native Americans here in the Northwest, and they've actually got a teepee. Yeah, constructed, actually built right here in the exhibit hall. So it's sitting right next to us. So if you're wondering where that came from, John was gesturing over to the teepee, and some of you might have said, well, that's kind of a strange illustration. Well, that's why, because we're right here in this Native American setting in the convention hall. So, John, one thing people can do, I'm hearing you, is they can invest in relationships. And this is going to have a bearing on their physical health.
Absolutely. And we have discovered that there are various factors in relationship. For instance, a healthy family spends time together.
Right.
There is no substitute. If dad doesn't have time for the family and the kids, the day will come when the kids are older and dad will say, well, son, help me on this, and he didn't have time for the kids back when they were young, and now they don't have time for him either. Mm. So family time, very, very important. No substitute for it. Then the whole question of showing appreciation.
Okay.
If we live in the same house with somebody else, then is it asking too much that we tell our wife or our kids, I appreciate, Tommy, that you did this. My, that was wonderful. Mom really appreciates this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell a story. A mother was just there in her kitchen. I guess she's washing the dishes.
Uh-huh.
And the door opens and in comes little, well, we'll call him Tommy. In comes little Tommy. He's 4 years old.
Okay.
And he is carrying tulips, flowers. And they're of all sizes, and some have long stems, and some have short stems, and some have mud on the roots, and he's bringing them in, and mother looks over there, and she sees the mud is falling on her kitchen floor, and she's just about ready to reprimand little Tommy. And Tommy has a big smile on his face and says, Mommy, I brought them all for you because I love you.
Wow.
And then Mom, she puts away the dishcloth, and she said, Tommy, thank you so much for bringing these flowers to Mommy. Mm. I appreciate them. And she put them in a vase and put them right there on the table. And so it's more important that we express appreciation of people than it is that we keep the kitchen floor clean.
Okay. And sometimes we can be overly preoccupied with things, thinking we're doing something for health or cleanliness. And we're really undermining the social fabric, aren't we?
That's right.
Wow, great story. Well, I know how it works. We got all kinds of great guests coming through the booth. You're another one of them, Dr. Youngberg. And unfortunately, I know this clock just keeps running, but there are people who are hearing about Win Wellness for the first time. How does someone actually get your materials?
Win Wellness has a website, which is WINWELLNESS. .org.
Okay.
And there you can see what our whole program is about. Basically, we have 29 topics which are going around the world and being used in 30 languages world over.
Wonderful. So it's winwellness.org.
That is correct.
John, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, and may the higher power be with each one of those who listens.
Thanks so much. We got to slip away. We've got one more segment coming up, though, in today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got a physician standing by with some remarkable medical insights. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
What I say, you already know, but you don't believe. You won't accept, you don't conceive. When you're inside your car, you feel safest of all. Are you safe? Are you? 2 tons of sheet metal in your hands. 2 tons don't run on autopilot. You have a mission. It's no collision. Hold the phone. Don't text. You're angling to be next. Oh, you've done it before. What's the harm? Just this once, there's no alarm. Got your hands on the wheel? No big deal. Brothers and sisters, you won't see it coming. You're off the road. Your life explodes. It's not worth it. Don't do it. You only think there's nothing to it. Put it down. Hang up. Pay attention to highway action. Behind the wheel, there is no such thing as a small distraction. Join the conversation at DecideToDrive.org, a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who would rather help keep your bones strong than put them back together.
We are here to say a word about cancer.
When you talk to someone who has been diagnosed with cancer,
be positive.
Be supportive.
That's it. Stop right there.
Don't start telling them about your Uncle Vern.
Or the next door neighbor.
Don't be grim.
And try not to disappear either.
Don't cross to the other side of the street.
Don't stop calling.
Don't cry.
Don't ever say, you're living my worst nightmare.
You know who you are.
Here's the important part.
Be positive.
Be positive.
Sé positivo.
Say these words.
You will do great.
Keep calling.
Check in.
Be a friend.
Or be a new friend.
Be a supportive.
Positive friend.
Smile.
Try not to be afraid.
Or act afraid.
Fear is not useful.
Be a funny, hopeful human being.
If you come across cancer,
let it transform you into your most positive self.
And inspire.
Urge.
Fortify.
Rally.
Encourage someone to do great.
This message brought to you by cancer survivors.
For more information, to hear stories, or share your own, visit DoGreatCampaign.com. Do great.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose with Dr. Lorraine Barton, winding up our final segment of the show. Lorraine, it's great to have you with us in the studio today.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you, David.
And, of course, it's a virtual studio here in this convention center, but that doesn't matter. I know you've got a lot of great information. For those who don't know Dr. Barton, you're a pediatrician first,
That's right?
Yes,
I'm a pediatrician. I have a subspecialty of neonatology, which is taking care of very premature babies and sick babies. But I also am very interested in lifestyle medicine, and so I have also obtained a degree in preventive medicine.
And you've got a master's
in
public health.
And a master's in public health, right.
So Dr. Barton is well qualified to speak to issues across the age range, with that special emphasis, though, on the youngest in our populations. One of the things that you have seen, I know, in your practice is when a mother has a new baby, there's a certain thing that often tends to be deficient in her life. What is that?
That is sleep.
Sleep. But it's not just women with new babies. We're a sleep-deprived society, aren't we?
That's right. Right now, they think that probably the majority of people do not get enough rest.
How do you know what enough rest is? Do you have any window
on
that
yes,
for us?
Well, yes. They have actually looked at what people do best, how they are able to function the best, whether it's in their work or in their school or anything. And they've shown that adults need at least 7 to 8 hours, preferably even 8 hours of sleep.
Wow.
Teenagers and younger children need much more. They may need as many as 10 or 11 hours of sleep.
Really, 11 hours
even
of sleep?
Even 11 for, say, a grade school child.
Really?
Yes.
And it's so easy with all the entertainment that's available at the click of a button. These
Correct.
Kids are often not getting anywhere close to
that's
that, are
true.
They?
That's true. Fatigue is the most common problem worldwide.
Wow.
And in the health area. One of the most common problems that we see.
Now, for a student, for a worker, we might say, yeah, fatigue, you know, could interfere with our vigilance. We may be more prone to accidents. A student may not be able to attend as well in a classroom. But are there other health consequences of lack of sleep besides just being tired?
Right. Recently, they've learned that dementia and maybe even possibly Alzheimer's could be related to lack of sleep. So
really?
Especially dementia. I'm not going to go there with Alzheimer's, but dementia is more common in people who have chronically had less sleep throughout their lives.
Okay, and for the lay listener, of course, dementia is the broad category of losing
right. Just
mental
losing your mental function. Many people, as they get older, we think, oh, they're just getting old. But much of that is related to their lifestyle habits when they lose their capacity to think and to know who their children are and things like this. We'd like to keep our mental abilities perfect until the last moment if possible.
Right, right. And so one of the things that helps us do that is getting adequate rest.
That's right.
Tell us more why we should be concerned about this topic of rest and sleep.
Right. Well, it's one of the most, the 10 most common reasons that people visit the doctor. Mm. One of those is lack of sleep or problems actually getting to sleep.
Okay.
Or waking up in the middle of the night. Especially as people get older. This is a very, very common problem, but we do see it even with adolescents.
So you and your practice as a pediatrician see adolescents with sleep problems?
We have seen this, yes. I don't personally currently take care of adolescents, but it is a common problem.
Okay, so you're working with the neonates, the
Correct.
Little ones.
Right.
And even if they had a sleep problem, they wouldn't tell you.
That's right.
Okay. So what can we do if we have such a problem? If we're not sleeping well, are there some simple things that we can do?
Yes, there are. First of all, you'd asked earlier how much sleep we need. And as I mentioned, people live longer, actually, if they get more sleep.
Okay.
So if you start getting less than 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night, you actually don't live as long as people who get, say, 8 hours of sleep.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you have to set habits that allow you to go to sleep. We need two kinds of rest and sleep. One is daily, every day, and one is weekly. Right?
Okay.
So if you do it, if you lose sleep daily, a lot of people think, I'm going to catch up on the weekend.
Okay. Fair enough.
But you cannot really replace your lost sleep.
Really?
That's
so there
true.
Isn't this idea of a sleep debt that you could
right.
repay to
you
some extent?
You cannot repay it. So once you've lost that sleep, it is lost.
Huh.
And so this is something everybody needs to consider, not just for now, to feel better, to work better, or study better, but this is long-term related to what's going to happen to you as you get older.
So, Dr. Barton, let me see if I've got this right. If I've cut myself short on sleep, it is true that if I get more rest, I may be able to function normally the next
Correct.
Day. But what you're saying is if I look at the chronic effects of sleep deprivation, I haven't undone that damage, like increasing my risk of dementia
that's
or things
correct.
Like that.
Right.
Okay, well,
right.
that's sobering stuff.
Yeah. So falling asleep while driving, you mentioned that a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the major causes of automobile accidents. People have what we call micro sleeps, where they sleep for just seconds.
They don't even realize
it. They don't even realize it.
Wow.
Or you're sitting in a meeting. You've probably had this happen to you.
Okay.
I know I have.
Uh-huh.
You're sitting there and you're listening, you think. Suddenly you realize the meeting's over or you're on to something different. And it's really, it's serious when it's happening while you're driving.
So if something like that happens, if you look up and you see that you're at exit 252 and you were just at exit 240.
Right. Only 4 seconds and can be fatal.
4 seconds, that little.
4 seconds and you could have a fatal accident.
Wow. Okay, so sleep is important when you're behind the wheel. It's important in those business meetings. It's important in the classroom. But, Lorraine, a lot of people, they've told me, just like you, they're in the office and they'll say, I don't really need that much sleep. Have you heard that one before?
We hear it all the time. It says, I don't need that much sleep. I can get by on 5 hours or less, so this doesn't apply to me.
Is that true for some
people?
It is
not true. The fact is that everybody varies somewhat in their sleep amount that they need, but the need is definitely for at least 7 hours minimum.
Wow. So even if a person seems to be functioning well, they're they're paying a price.
Yes, you perform at your best if you've had at least 8 hours of sleep.
Okay, so don't stay up all night studying for the test.
No, it's not worth it. So this is what is difficult to restore if you get that sleep debt. And as people age, the other problem they have is actually falling asleep.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that's another serious problem that we see with elderly people. And so we want to just encourage you, try your best to start going to bed at a reasonable hour. We suggest at least by 10 o'clock at night.
Okay.
This will give you a long enough time to get to sleep within 15 or 20 minutes and to wake up refreshed.
Okay, so we got the message. We need to get more sleep. We need to go to bed earlier. But you got to help us, because some people say, it doesn't matter, Dr. DeRose, Dr. Barton, if I go to sleep, I cannot fall asleep. I mean, do you have some practical suggestions that can help people sleep?
Right. If you can put yourself into some sort of a routine, it works.
Okay.
It may not be easy the first few days, but if you every day say, I'm going to go to bed at 9:30 or I'm going to go to bed at 10, and you just lay there, don't worry about if you can't fall asleep at the beginning. Usually within 10 to 15 minutes, if you just lie completely quiet, close your eyes, don't get up, keep your room dark.
Okay.
You will get into the habit of falling asleep.
So I've heard some people say quiet, dark, cool, and comfortable. Are
correct.
Those
that sounds very good.
Okay, so those all seem
very
to apply.
Good. Very
if it's
good.
Too hot, most people have trouble sleeping,
correct.
Don't they?
Right. And you know what? Sleeping pills are used by about 43 million people in the United States.
Wow.
Guess what? They only help you sleep about 11 minutes longer.
What?
Yep. The recent study just showed that.
Really?
That sleeping pills only help you sleep about an average of 11 minutes more and could even make you feel sleepier in the daytime. So it's not worth it to rely on sleeping pills. And sleeping pills have a higher incidence of people who commit suicide later in their life. Later as well. So we don't want you to be on sleeping pills.
Well, we're basically out of time, Lorraine. I think the message has come through loud and clear that sleep is important. Sleeping pills are not the solution. As we're closing out, any final things you want to tell people that'll help them rest better?
Try not to think about all the troubles you've had during the day. Try to go to bed with just peace that you've done your best for that day. Make sure you don't have anything like anger in your heart as you go to bed. Just relax and perhaps just ask for the Lord to bless you and just go to sleep in peace.
Okay, thank you so much. Dr. Lorraine Barton, closing out our show on today's edition of American Indian Living. That's it. That's all for today's edition. Thank you so much for joining us. For all of us at American Indian Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.